Okay, we are on page 280 on the top numbers, which corresponds to page Kuf Mem Omid Beis. We're at the second paragraph, or the first paragraph, the big word that starts Hini Zilu Mazeh in the English on the opposite page. It's now with the corresponding to the others. The Alter Rebbe is talking about a statement from the Sivas Ravash explaining that anybody who gets angry is like they worship an idol. And the Baal Shem Tov explains that since there is this thing called Ashgacha Pratis, and everything that happens is Ashgacha Pratis, and he bases that idea, the concept of Ashgacha Pratis, according to the Baal Shem Tov, is a result of the long explanation which is given in Shar Yichud Ve'amuna, of about the Olam Dvarach Hashem Nitzav Bashamayim, that the word of Hashem always stands in heaven, and that this is Dvar Avaya, is constantly enlivening the world and bringing it into existence. And the Rebbe goes into great explanation in detail of the various different types of tzimtzum from one world to the next. And we left off last time, we were talking about the chayis and the relationship to the sarim, to the mazoilos, till finally as it comes down here. And he called that the gullus hashchina, that the dvar havaya, which is another word for shechina, which is another word for adnai, which is another name for malchus, depending on which philosophy book you're learning, is enclosed in this world, in such a way that it cannot be perceived openly. So we call that the Seid Galus Hashchina. So now what he's going to discuss is, so how is it then that things which are in opposition to Hashem can also come into being? Because since we're not into pluralities or pantheism, so everything was created by Hashem, even those things which are antithetical to Hashem. So he says, "Hine zelu mazeh." This, the line was explained, same thing over in chapter 6, way back in chapter 6 of Tanya, that there he talks about how the forces of evil, the klipa and the sitra achra, receive their nurture. And we've explained the expression zelu mazeh is taken from the pasuk, so we're not going to do that here again. Yesh asar k'sarim kisrei demisavusa. There are 10 crowns of impurity, which correspond to the 10 spheres. This is the nurture for the forces of evil. Okay, it is, you could say it's a parallel system. It's a parallel system, but the 10 spheres, as we call them, 10 spheres, direct the godliness into each organism to provide its nurture and vitality and keep it in existence. The forces of evil we call them a klippa, klippa meaning a shell, which means that it itself only is just an outside thing. The only reason why you have a shell is, well, it would get kind of messy trying to bring the eggs home if they weren't in shells. So you need to have them, and they do serve a function, and there is a purpose to evil. And even if you want to say that the reason why evil exists is so that we cannot choose it, that's also fine. That means it's serving a purpose.
Yes.
So that means that Hashem did not create the world for evil. We talked about this last week or the week before when we talked about the king making a banquet, if you recall, and he doesn't make it for the dog food. You remember such a thing. So the godliness which comes into them is why is it called a crown? It's because a crown goes around your head. And the godliness that comes to Klippa is only affects it superficially and does not it clothe itself into it. That's why there are terms that are given to it that the Klippa is referred to as Turi de Prude, the mountains of separation. A mountain is basically nothing more than a big pile of dirt. And that's all a mountain is, but it happens to get in the way. So if there it's a way to circumvent it or tunnel it through, it doesn't become a problem anymore. The example you give is like a balloon. How many helium balloons can you put in the back of your car when you bought them from the dollar store because your daughter's birthday? 4.
13.
Oh, you have a minivan.
Yeah.
Okay, 13. How many uninflated helium balloons can you put into your minivan?
A couple hundred thousand. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And what's the difference? Air.
Yeah.
That's all it is. They blew themselves up. They made themselves for a metziah. Because you got to understand now, which would your daughter rather have on her birthday? She'd rather have the inflated ones. That's exactly the analysis. The forces of evil are so desirous because they're all puffed up to make themselves look good. Yeah. Okay, but if you take the air out of them and you realize they're just a shell, well, who wants it? Nobody wants it. So this is why it's called Kisre Dimisavusa. Crowns of impurity. Okay? That's the English translation. That's the way Rabbi Lipsker always translated the word misavusa. But I've learned later on the word misavusa actually means filthy. Which is a little filthy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Filthy crowns.
Filthy crowns.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So because that's a little more graphic and gets right to the point.
It is, yeah.
That the forces of evil, they're not just, because when we think impure, you know, so you're thinking like, you know, GMO soybeans. Okay, so they got those little things stuck in them so they can survive the weather. It's not as good as non-GMO. It's not so pure.
Uh-huh.
Okay, or you know the stuff that wasn't filtered properly, so it's not uh-huh. so pure. This is we're talking filthy over here.
Right.
Okay. Even something which identifies itself as being Hashem, like you talked about elsewhere, that Paro was able to say Li Yor Va'ani Asisani, the river is mine. I made myself.
Right.
I'm Hashem. I created myself.
Right.
That even something so abominable as that receives its life force from Hashem.
Yes.
In a very superficial way. And hence the term crowns of impurity. This is then how, is because there is this, we talked at the beginning of the letter, we talked about there are different types of tzimtzumi.
Right.
And he mentioned this in chapter 20 of Egeres HaKodesh, that the system of tzimtzumim of Atzilus only works in Atzilus. And you have to have this quantum leap from Atzilus to Bria. Now you have Bria type Tzimtzumim.
Right.
Because if you just have less and less and less Atzilus Tzimtzumim, you're never going to get to Bria. You're just going to get less and less and less of Atzilus.
Right.
And so it is with from Bria to Yetzir, Yetzir to Asiya, Asiya to this physical world. Every time there's a change in world, quantum it requires this quantum leap.
Infinite.
Yeah. So the forces of evil, they receive their godliness in from their source. Their source is only very tertiary. And now that then descends and is able to enliven in a very external way the souls of the non-Jews. Gam ken kalulus me'eser b'chinas elu mamish. So non-Jews have 10 spheres also. Okay, but they're getting their life force from the other side. Does that mean that they're all bad? No, it doesn't mean that. That's just the way they are. Okay, you can have some very... Listen, we pride ourselves that close to 1/7 of all the Nobel Prize winners were Jewish.
Right.
Going back, all the way back to when Mr. Nobel felt sorry about making dynamite and gave the first to one. From then until now, 1/7 of the prizes have been awarded to Jews. So we say, "Whoa, look how smart Jews are." So what does that tell me? But 6/7 of them were awarded to non-Jews.
Right.
Whether they needed or deserved them or not. I mean, you know, that's another story. Everything's with whatever. But the people who received the awards for chemistry and physics and medicine, I would probably say they're pretty smart.
Pretty fair. Yeah.
We're not going to take anything away from them because of what their nurture is.
Are you going to complain a robin is a robin?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a kosher bird, so it's a robin.
It's a robin.
It's a robin.
And he says, everybody knows. It's not one of those things like sort of like, you know, you were born knowing this, right?
Yeah.
Masha comes with a Sefer Gilgulim. Yes, everybody knows what's written in Sefer Gilgulim.
Sure.
Yeah, hello. There's a verse that says that one man will dominate over another man for evil, for bad. Shehu said galus hashchina b'teich haklipa lahachi yoisim lahashlitam bizman hagalus. That what is that verse? It doesn't say for Gilgulim. That what is that verse talking about? Man dominating over man is that the klipa, the forces of evil, dominate over the divine presence, suck in the divine presence as much as possible. That's called the exile of the Shekhinah, because the godliness which is now supposed to be directed to us is directed through and filtered through the forces of evil. But that, and for how does that make us? That makes us really bad. Because that's the reason, as it says, Lachin ha'umais ha'yishalten al Yisrael li'hais nefashis ha'umas mehaklipa asher shechina mislabeshes b'chinas galus b'teichem. That's why they have dominion over us for the last 2,000 years and change. Is because the divine presence, listen, if Hashem didn't want us to be in galus, we wouldn't be in galus. And if Hashem didn't want the Romans to knock down the temple, then the Romans would not have knocked down the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
So that it means that there is a certain godliness which is directed to the nations of the world, which provides them a tremendous amount of chayas. So that now, for example, the world is run by white European men, for example.
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part. I'm not kicking for the billion Chinese that have, like, destroyed the economy of the entire world. We're not counting that. But for the most part, you know, it's got to pass through Europe or it's not going.
Right.
You know, so, and because that's where, that's Galus Rome. That's where the Shekhinah is resting now.
It's true.
That's why we don't get to run the world. Is because we don't have, Hashem hasn't given us the power to run the world. Okay, and why does Hashem want it? I don't know why Hashem wants it, but it says one of the reasons why the Jews went into exile, why the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, needed to be knocked down, is because if the temple, the Beis HaMikdash was going to exist, then we wouldn't have the dispersal of the Jews around the world.
Correct.
And we wouldn't have all of the converts who converted.
Correct.
Okay? They might not have picked themselves up from, I don't know, Butte, Montana, and moved to Jerusalem if the only place where Jews were was in Jerusalem. Fought That's a pretty hefty ride from Butte to Jerusalem.
From Fort Worth.
Yeah. Have to be some serious people over there. So like this, that you put a Chabad house in Billings, so this guy, he's like, you know, flipping through, and he says, what's this Chabad stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
And he gets really excited, and he puts in, oh, it couldn't be in Montana, and he punches in Montana. And lo and behold, a mere 4 hours drive away, there's this rabbi, and he gets all excited. And then he moves to Jerusalem. Never would have happened if the guy hadn't been in Missoula, or Billings, wherever he is.
Would the temple be knocked down now?
If the temple were still where it was, and all the Jews were there, there would be less of a likelihood that we would exert enough of an energy to draw all those converts to us.
Sure.
So we had to make the house call.
That's right.
So.
Kicking and screaming.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what would you rather be, living in Oak Park, Michigan and having to go to work every day and dealing with these people every single day? Would you rather be sitting in Yerushalayim someplace under a fig tree? You know, no brainer. Hello. Hine, I like figs. Hine av, shizetzar bir rachav.
To try me.
Yeah. You know, who was it? Somebody said, I've been rich, I've been poor, and rich is better. So. I don't remember who said that. We'll look it up later. Ashizetzarek bir rachav. He says, very interesting. He doesn't usually say this expression. He usually says ber hetiv. He says we have to explain this well. Here he says we have to give this an expansive explanation. Because this is not just something that's nice to know. The word hetiv could mean, you could translate the word hetiv nice.
Yeah.
You know, when you do this, it would be good if you knew this stuff.
It really is.
But the point that he's mentioning over here, when he finally gets back to that kol ha-kayas ki'ilo avodah zarah, that anybody gets angry, is as though they worshipped idols, is a principal tenet in Judaism. Not so much the anger part, But the explanation that the Baal Shem Tov gave, that was elucidated in this letter by the Alter Rebbe, about all the background as to a person not getting angry and realizing the involvement of Hashem in the creation.
Right.
That is an absolute essential principle that a person must have clear like the nose on their face.
Yeah.
I don't know how people's clear people's noses are, but should be as apparent as to the person that they understand that divine presence affects every corpuscle in our body. Ehumam, how it is. Mikol makayim ha'emes kein hu. But nonetheless, the truth is, that's the way it is. Ella shafal pikein ein haklipas v'ha'umais yoinkin mukubolam chayas ella maha'ara hanim shachas lahema v'chines acharayim v'kedusha. So the klippas look very big, and they look like they're dominating on over us. And indeed, they are dominating over us. But it's only because Hashem has blown them up like big helium balloons. And how are they getting it? They're not getting the super primo. They're not even getting good quality godliness in an indirect way. They're getting scraps, as he pointed out before, that you have from the spheroids. And the spheroids go into the hechalus, which is the external part of the sphere. And from the hechal, it goes into the chayas. And from the chayas, it goes into the sarim. And from the sarim, it goes into the individual mazolos. And each mazol is striking every single blade of grass and telling it to grow.
Right.
Okay, so now, instead of it going and being directed into a blade of grass, which, by the way, is klippa. This klippa is no good, but it's still klippa.
Yeah.
So the godliness is coming into it. It's by that time, it's very low-level godliness. In addition to that, it's poor quality godliness. And in addition to that, it's not really even doing a very good job of keeping them alive, just kind of like propping them up. So there's really not a whole lot going on. When you're talking gullus or shchina, like, how much of the Shekhinah is actually in Gullus? Not a whole lot. Just everything we're participant in, everything that we can possibly recognize.
Just only
but, you know, it's very little, and that's what comes into the world. Commander Shadi Basar Kaspi, like a person who throws a piece of meat to an old dog. Well, it's Nebuch, this dog, he can't do anything with it. Doesn't work anymore. It apparently can scratch itself. You got to keep it alive. So you throw it a piece of meat.
Hmm.
Okay, and the meat that you're giving it is not the sirloin, and you're not saying, here, pooch, 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 pooch.
Right.
You're giving it the scraps, and you're throwing it, I'm here, dog, eat, you know. Go in the woods and die. Don't do that here. And that even with this, through these different types of contractions and different coverings that are awesome and totally, totally different one from the other, it's able now, the godliness is able to clothe a little tiny bit into the coarse externality of this world. And makes the nations rich and onerous. It's an interesting thing that I saw. He uses the word mushpa'is, shefa. The word mushpa'is, it means to flow, is what it means.
Mm.
Okay, so there's this godly influence that comes down to it. The word, like mashpia,
right,
is the same word.
Right.
Now, in order for a teacher, I saw this in one of the commentaries in Tanya, I didn't see a footnote where he got it from. In order for a teacher to be mashpia, to give over intellect to the student, the teacher has to contain the intellect and put it into an abridged form and clothe it in stories,
sure,
present it in a language which is relevant to the student.
Palpable.
And so what is coming out, what is coming from the Rav, is a great diminution of what the Rav really has.
Sure, of course.
That's why there's an expression that a person doesn't understand the Rebbe for 40 years. because it takes 40 years, meaning the person, Ben Arboim Labina, a person has to spend a certain amount of intellectual achievement and involvement to strip away the Mashalim and to expand the Kitzarim, the bridged version, and give it the full depth and whatever and breadth, then it can come now that he can be a Rebbe too. Okay? So what does Hashem do? Hashem is mushpa ushiv kavod. He's giving him little drips and drabs. Okay? The greater, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, I think, also over here. I've used this example a couple times in the last month, a couple times. The greatest nation that ever lived on the earth was? That's a point of debate, I guess.
Israel. In the time of Shlomo Melech.
No. You're thinking biblical too much.
Secular, I would say.
You'd have to say the United States in the last couple of years.
I'm talking
probably
since
Russia.
Since history.
Rome. End of story.
Right.
End of story.
Rome. So Mashiach is going to come. And all the nations are going to line up and say, can we come too?
Exactly.
And Rome comes and there is, I'm Rome, I'm the big guy. And I want to present my case. Mashiach just poo-poos them. Says, what did you do? You did nothing. And they're going into the details. You guys did nothing. And anything you did was because Hashem let you do it.
Right.
So right. You accomplished nothing in this world. You contributed nothing to the world.
Wow. What about Israel then?
Israel gets to come automatically. We've got a no-cut contract, you know, so we don't have to do anything and we're going. So.
But I would argue they've contributed, if on that scale, they must have contributed things that count.
Let's just hope so.
I hope so, yeah.
I don't have the scale, though.
Yeah, I
or maybe it's just for...
Remember also that there's those people who get to come so they have ringside and you have bleacher seat, too, you know, depending on what they were able to do.
There's a parking lot with tailgate parties.
I'm sure there is. Okay. I don't know about those ribs though. Anyway. And then all the physical pleasures of the world. So they get so it looks like they're doing really good. You know? Yeah. You ask the Romans around somewhere around like the year 100. Yeah, they were it didn't get any better.
Yeah.
You know, it was good to be a Roman.
Yeah.
You know, they had everything that they possibly needed. You know, but what did it amount to? A whole bunch of nothing. Which is not the case with the Jews. That the Jews get it straight from Hashem's face, not from behind the back. As it says that Hashem will shine his face upon you, or to you. And depending upon what kind of soul a person gets, that's the type of godliness that they get. Okay, there have been nations that have attacked and afflicted the Jewish people and have used exactly this point to say, what do you mean you're like, you're the chosen people? You're God's favorite nation? Look, you're a captive and I'm a captor.
Right, yeah, sure.
So who's better?
Yeah.
I'm in control, so I must be better.
Yeah, who owns?
With you, right. You with right, your sure. beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, so it doesn't mean that we're on top because the, I might be bigger than a helium balloon, but if you filled up this room with helium balloons,
yeah.
It'd be hard for me to be in here because it'd be full of helium balloons.
Sure.
You know, so.
It'd be hard to move.
Yeah, so yeah. That's basically what's happened. So, okay, so I'm alive. And I'm breathing, and I have a neshama, and the helium balloons are preventing me from moving. So it's the same thing with a klippa. I'm alive, I'm getting my godliness, getting it straight. It's not coming down the way I would like to because of the gullus, because some of it is being directed away to the forces of evil, and those forces of evil are preventing me from doing my movement. Mm. Okay? And since we're speaking about movement, so... my wife came up with an insight from last week. There was an announcement of two black holes that crashed into each other, setting off gravitational waves, thus proving that energy equals mass times the velocity squared.
Right.
Okay, and they were able to actually pick up on these gravity waves, mm-hmm. something which they hadn't been able to witness till now. Okay? And people are jumping, you know, Jews are jumping up and down, and they found it on Rosh Hashanah 100 years after Einstein came out with the theory. Okay, good, fine. You know, so. But my wife said, well, what's gravity? Gravity is, you have something spinning, something moving.
Right.
And because it's moving, things are drawn down to it. Okay?
Yeah.
Things fall down to it. The Earth is spinning at 24,000 miles an hour, okay? And things just kind of like go clunk, and they come down right on the Earth, and they stay on the Earth.
It's not quite.
What's the problem?
It doesn't work that way.
It kind of sort of does.
Mass displaces
centrifugal force would imply the opposite.
Centrifugal force makes things fly out.
Correct.
Well, the gravity is like a bowling ball on a mattress. Its weight causes it things to bend, and that bend is gravity. And the waves are what they measured of this spread of bending.
That's on the massive scale,
right?
So, but then we have movement, and movement causes hamshacha. That's basically the fort. Mm-hmm. So, see, if you're moving in the right way, so you're doing Torah and mitzvahs, so then you get hamshachas of elokus. So we become like this little mass causing these gravity things to go. And if you do it really a whole lot, so then you can even perceive the gravity as it's waving around, affecting the whole area around, as it's bending the light all around it. So, anyway. So the acher hadvarim ha'emesayla. So now, that we've gone on now. 5.5 pages. Now, then we can go hagiluy v'yudim l'kol. Then these things now are understood to everybody. Nachzor l'inyan rishon. We'll go back to how we started the whole thing. That the inyan kasha hu chayvei avodah zarah. That anger is like idolatry. Da hainu b'milei da alma. That means when you're talking about a person getting angry about mundane affairs. Mm-hmm. Because all of the mundane affairs that are happening out there are hashgacha pratis. The things that bother people are their health, their money, and their families. And that's also the same that gets them worried, and that also gets them angry when things aren't going the way that they want them to go with those three things. Okay? So, but all of that is hakol b'dei shemayim chutz miyir shemayim, because everything is in the hands of heaven, except for if you're going to be good or bad. Okay, and then even how much good or bad, we've talked about this before, how much good or bad, how much good or how much bad a person is going to do is also basically divine providence.
Right.
Because right now, we don't have the choice of eating a ham sandwich. Because there's no ham sandwich to eat.
See the lack of mitzvah that you caused.
So. That's why there's a whole discussion. Are we doing right now 365 prohibitions, adhering to keeping those transgressions? Or is it only one of the things sitting right in front of you and you say, no, I'm not going to do that? So you can understand why it would be that it could go both ways.
It's on different levels, right?
Yeah. So, right. But now it's actually being able to do a transgression is only possible with divine providence putting the person in a position
right.
where they would be able to do that transgression.
Right. Correct.
So our misdeeds are only at the behest of the Almighty.
Right.
There's only so many misdeeds Hashem wants us to do in the course of our lifetimes.
Right.
Okay? And that's where, you know, HaMeichim Mitzadi Gever, wherever Hashem directs us, okay. Those are going to be the misdeeds that we're going to have the opportunity to do. Which means, oh, Hashem put me here, I could do it. No, it's exactly the opposite. Hashem put you there so that you shouldn't do it.
To reward you with a mitzvah.
Yeah. But not because it says, Shava al tasa ki ilu asa. A person who sat back and did not do a transgression is given credit as though he had done something.
That's right.
Done something because he did something positive because he actively did not do something negative.
Did not do negative, right.
V'lachein b'mili d'shmaila efshir mi'isura l'shayach. Therefore, with respect to matters of heaven, you say, "B'chol yidei shemayim chutz mi'yira shemayim," to warn off things that are wrong. The reason is that at that point we can't attribute it to divine providence, like we say, like when, for example, when Moshe got mad.
Yes.
Okay, Moshe getting mad did have his consequences. What did he get mad at? He got mad because he thought somebody wasn't following the halacha.
Right.
Like, what are you guys doing? Hello? Right. This whole thing over here is to get the divine presence down in our midst, and it has to be done letter perfect or else it's not going to work, and here you're messing things up. Right. What's wrong with you guys?
Right.
So, Dahayinu Mishum ki havaya hakara lefanav mitzvah zu lahafrosha mi'asura kedei l'schusay. That means Hashem caused him to encounter, to come across this mitzvah specifically. Got a note here.
Isn't this where Aaron ate the...
Aaron ate, did not eat the sacrifice.
The sacrifice.
Because he was an oinan. He was a mourner.
Yes.
So to prevent him from doing anything wrong, and in order that he should get merit for doing the right thing.
Right.
So if it is, so when is it then that a person can get angry? Is if by your anger it will prevent somebody from doing something wrong and, encourage them to do something right.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, then you could do it. Like, that's the reason why Moshe allowed himself, because he thought something was going on that was wrong and wanted to have done the right thing.
Righteous indignation.
Yeah, so we see, though, with Moshe, didn't work all that well either.
Not altogether.
Because he was wrong in getting angry.
Uh-huh.
And it had an effect on him.
Yeah.
Because who was it that taught Aaron that an Einan is not allowed to eat a sacrifice?
Moshe.
It was Moshe. And Moshe forgot.
Who forgot?
Why did Moshe forget?
Because he got angry.
We just said, it's probably goy. Hamedaber milvavol b'tfilosay. If, however, you have a person who doesn't have any free choice, there's an example talked about in Tanya, which is it's taken from the Gemara. That a person is standing, Shmainasre. And somebody comes in. It could be a worker dude. It's somebody, some associate. He's davening Shmeina Esrei, and this person is talking to him and wants to know what's doing. How are you? How you doing? He's not telling him, "Oh, by the way, the building is on fire. I think you need to get out."
Right.
That's not what he's talking about.
Narish kite.
So it says you shouldn't even tell this person. Well, you shouldn't even pick up a finger and say, like, to indicate, like, 1 minute.
Right.
You know, hold off, I'll get to you. It's just, it says that you should ignore this person totally.
Right.
Because a person only has free choice in the mitzvahs that they're going to do.
Right.
And that's true including non-Jews.
Yes.
So a non-Jew has freedom of choice for his 7 mitzvahs.
Right.
If he's going to believe in God, if he's not going to believe in idols, if he's not going to kill, steal, commit adultery, be cruel to animals.
Right.
Of course, that's all a guy has
free choice
in. That this non-Jew is speaking to you when you're in the middle of Shemayna Esrei is totally and completely directive from Hashem.
100%.
That non-Jew has absolutely no choice because he's not doing anything wrong by talking to you.
No.
That has nothing to do with anything with him serving Hashem.
No.
Okay, unless the person is saying, "Oh, I know that guy can't talk to me. Now I'm going to go bother him. I know. Let's see what,
mess up his concentration
when he's diving." No, but this guy, he just wants, like, you know, instructions. He wants to, you know, he hasn't seen the guy. He wants to say hello to the guy.
Right.
So it says in that instance, you should understand. Don't get mad at the guy.
He doesn't have anything.
He's not in control of this.
You don't have.
It'd be the same thing. Right. You have a 2-year-old. They call them the terrible twos.
Right.
Can you getting angry at your 2-year-old is not going to help the situation.
They only last till they're 37.
You mean there is a hope for it to end? Yeah. Anyway.
That's where I'm at right now, so I can't tell you more.
Okay. So the it would be inappropriate when the 2-year-old goes into a closet and pulls everything off. And then pulls everything out and makes a big huge mess.
Sure.
Or goes into the pantry and finds a bag of flour and just becomes the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yes.
You know, there's no, getting angry is inappropriate because the kid doesn't know.
No, of course not.
The kid's not making a rational choice. I'm going to go be bad.
Right.
The kid's saying, oh, look, this is really cute. If I dump this bag on my head, so then it'll be really cute. Right? So, okay, when the kid takes a fork and starts heading for the wall outlet because it looks like it's a good fit.
Yeah. Then it's...
You can act...
Yeah.
But anger is not going to help. Just, teach the kid that, no, that's not what you're supposed to do.
Right.
So this non-Jew who is approaching him, this situation that a person finds themselves in, which is not involved, the person who is bothering him is not doing anything that violates any of their commandments.
Right.
So then a person has to understand right then the reason why this is happening right
straight
now is in order so that I should focus on my davening.
Exactly right.
In Hashem and so much so does he dominate over himself and strengthen himself so that he doesn't even recognize that there's somebody talking to him.
Right.
To get to that point, to be able to close your ears, yeah, you have to be a somebody.
That's a lot of work.
There is a story about the Rebbe Marash.
Yes.
The Rebbe Marash is Rebbe for a very short time. He died at 49, complications of diabetes.
Yeah.
He was obese. He had all the trappings of classic diabetes.
Diabetes, yeah.
Okay, he didn't live long enough that he suffered from amputations. No, but had he lived longer, that kind of stuff would have had sores in his feet. He had sores on his body that didn't heal. All kinds of stuff like this.
Yeah, sure.
So there's not a whole lot of stories about him per se. Right. There is a story that he was like some place, maybe he was eating or something like that, and he couldn't hear out of his right ear. And it's really bothering him. Why is it that he can't hear? Sometimes when your ear gets stuff, you kind of like, you wiggle a little, you blow open your eustachian tubes.
Right.
It's not nothing's happening. Okay? And this is going on, I don't know for how long. And he realized, when he had been learning that day,
right,
there was a commotion in the other room,
right,
and it was disturbing him. So he turned off his hearing in his right ear, he forgot to turn it back on.
Removed the soul power from his right ear.
Yeah. Okay, so to be able to do that, well, you have to have like the word Rebbe in front of your name.
You got to have some, cognition.
So what are you supposed to do then? If the Eberster has decided that he's going to send somebody to talk to you and you're in the middle of Shemayna Esrei, so what do you should do? You think you got it bad? Think how Hashem has it.
Right.
Here it is, you're trying to daven. What are you trying to do when you're trying to daven? Is you're trying to achieve nothingness, right? You're trying to be bittel. And here it is, this guy's getting in the way of your bittel, and it's getting you mad because you can't be bittel. Okay? So, how do you think Hashem feels? What did he says, think about Hashem, what Hashem's going through right now.
Right.
The Shechina is in Galus. It cannot express itself.
Right.
It has to keep alive all of these things that are antithetical to its existence.
Its only possibility of expression is you.
Yeah, and here it is. What are you doing? You're going to get mad?
Right.
No.
Right.
He says you have to meditate on this and think about the descent of the Shechina, so to speak, Viteri Poloim, and the awesome and wondrous descent that it caused, Lehislavish Nitzis Maha'ora, that a spark of its ray of the divine presence is now able to enclose itself To bring the world, the realm of klippa into existence. And right now, what did Hashem have to do? Hashem had to start with Eser Sviris HaGenuzis before Tzimtzum. And then there was a Tzimtzum HaRishon, which created a Makom Panei, a void. And into the void he introduced the Kav.
Right.
And then there was a meeting up between the void and the Kav, and that formed Ak. And then there's a holy Stalshalus with Akudim, Nekudim, and Vrudim. We have Pnimi Zekesen, Chesaini Zekesen, and you have Atzilus with the 10 spheres, and Malchus, and there's a quantum leap from Malchus to Bria, and from Bria to Yetzirah, and Yetzirah to Asiya, and finally into this world. And Hashem did all that so that this guy should come and bother you during davening.
Right.
Okay? How do you think Hashem feels? And what is this person doing? Hamidaber dvarim hamibavalim ma'avodas Hashem, kikavanas tefila. That person's existence right now is being that he is created in order to confuse you and take you away from your kavanas. You're standing there, you're in the groove, and you're really into the kavana thing, and it's like, wow. So a guy comes and says, yeah, let's see how wow. Okay, let's throw something at you. Okay, with me, I don't think I've ever had it where, or maybe if I did, I don't remember because it didn't register so much. Because with me, Hashem doesn't have to send a non-Jew to come and talk to me in the middle of davening. I'm doing that in my own head by myself. So I got the guy inside.
We got Jews that do it to help.
You know, so.
Fortunately,
there's a story that involves the Belzer Chassid and Lubavitcher Chassid.
Yeah.
The Belzers have a tradition of davening very fast. Yeah. It says that the Rebbe Sar Sholem, who was blind, could daven an entire Shacharis from morning brachas till Ach Tzadikim in 3 minutes. And it says they knew he was a tzaddik because from the time that he took his 3 steps back and 3 steps forward to the time he took his 3 steps back again was a minute. So he would spend an entire minute on Shemayna Esrei, and the other 2 minutes was the rest of davening. Okay? So you do what your Rebbe does, right? So the Chassidim emulated the Rebbe. Then at Belzer Chassidim have a tradition of davening very quickly. So the Lubavitcher said, how come you guys daven so quick? And he said, it's obvious. It says if you're in a wagon and there's a goy chasing you, you run away as fast as you can. So he says when you're davening, so the Yetzer Hara is going to get you, and so what do? You daven quickly so the Yetzer Hara doesn't get you. So the Lubavitcher said back, that's all very well and good if the goy's in another wagon. But if the goy's in the wagon with you, you have to stop the wagon and throw him off.
Right, exactly.
Chance Lubavitcher's daven supposedly longer.
So my son's not a tzaddik, but he does so quickly.
Your son could be a tzaddik. Hey, I wanted to finish it there, but it's still too much. So look at a good place to stop.
We're not in a race here.
As for the compiler writing, chart is where we're going to get to. That's where it's a good thing there's the English because they have the paragraphs. Okay. And sometimes the paragraphs are in the middle of a sentence.
Yeah, no, I hear always.
But, almost
always.
Because that's the way Hashem made things. That Hashem's speech, which is creating the world, is now enclosing itself into that non-Jew speech who is trying to confuse you in the middle of davening.
Right.
That is how we understand this verse that we started this lesson off with, that the rules one man over the other and it's bad for him. That it's all there. Why is it that Hashem gives such dominion to the forces of evil is for us? Like you said, why is evil existed even if it's just for us not to do it? But no, it's a very big thing. Because Hashem makes them very big and very beautiful, and they take up a lot of space, and it's very enticing, and there is godliness in it, at least superficially. But Hashem did it so that we should be able to focus better on what we're supposed to be doing and ignoring, walking away from that. And we will stop then at about 10 lines from the bottom. The first one line is Yishma Devarev on page Kuf Mem Aleph, Gumashikas of Malakate. And in English, it's the paragraph as for the compiler writing down Sharta, to be continued.